This is the Bama Podcast with Marty Solomon. I'm his co-host Brent Billings, and we're coming to you today with a special message before we get into our main episode.
Yeah, Brent, you can't
Marty,
throw...
What are we doing here?
You can't throw voices at people without playing the music, Brent. What's going on?
Well, they'll get their music here in a minute.
All right. We promised the music. We got a little special announcement. I made that sound like a bigger deal than it is. We wanted to kind of do like a state of the podcast, like what's going on, what's coming, all that kind of stuff. And it's probably a good time, Brent, to start by just saying, hey, we'd like to issue a session 6. A lot of people have found our podcast because of the Chosen episodes or whatever, and they just kind of like started listening. And that's great. Session 6 is an okay place to do it. But we like to remind people on a regular basis that this podcast is designed around a main body of work, which is really the first 5 sessions, what we call sessions, what you may call seasons. The first 5 sessions is really a walkthrough of the entire scripture from Genesis to Revelation. And then session 5 was a short journey through church history. And that's kind of, we consider that kind of like the body of work. Like that is the chunk that represents what Bema is. And we try to recommend to people who are new, session 6 kind of assumes that you've heard all that. And so we recommend going back and listening to those starting at the very beginning. It was years ago. So before COVID, before the world was, as crazy as it is today, it's a little time warp, but we recommend people go through there and just listen to the material. Brent, what would you add to that?
Well, I would say to start in the beginning, you do have to start at episode 0. That is kind of the where we lay out the framework of what we're talking about. The Bible itself starts at Genesis 1, so we like to start our episode 1 in that same place. But there is episode 0 that kind of lays down a few structural differences between Eastern and Western thought that will help you as you go through the rest of the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. So let's talk about the state of the podcast. First of all, where are we at? We're in a really cool place. We've added new voices to the team. Everybody's gotten to meet Elle and Josh and Reed and these new voices that have been added. And the reviews are in, Brent Billings. People have voice. They've used their voice. They have let me know their opinion. People love the team. I wouldn't say it's unanimous, but nothing's unanimous these days. Some people are concerned that I'm going away. Brent, do you know of any plans for me to go away? Are you guys trying to oust me?
No.
Okay. All right. Well.
No, definitely not.
All right. Well, there we go, everybody. Marty,
I've been riding the Marty coattails for a long time, and I don't think I'd get much further without you. So.
Oh, no. But yeah, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm very much a part of the team, and we'll continue to have a very heavy presence here on the Bema podcast. But this does allow me to have a little bit more freedom and for the team to have more diversity of thought, and that is beautiful. So that's awesome. And we want to talk about what's coming, and part of what's coming is more of them. So you're going to keep hearing Reed and Elle and Josh, and part of what's coming is more interviews. Like, we've been setting up a whole bunch of interviews, and part of what I love, Brent, is session 6 is so different. And so every listener is different and unique, and they all like different things. And so, you know, the interviews are just where it is for some people, and the Midrash episodes and the deep dives and the topical, like, it just, everybody loves some and hates others, and it's all different for everybody. So session 6 is always giving people, it's like a little surprise. It's like a little surprise of things that we love.
Yeah, and I think the emphasis is not that you are going away, but that we want to emphasize that it is not a cult of Marty.
That's right.
It is like sessions 1 through 5 are a particular set of teachings that you have put together, but you got those from other voices, and there are new voices who can speak into the conversation as well. And so we're bringing some of those voices into the podcast.
Yeah.
We don't all, like, the 5 of us do not agree on everything.
Absolutely.
By any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And so, like, it's just another way to bring more perspectives to the table. From the very beginning, we have brought perspectives that we don't agree with to the table just so everyone can see all of the conversation that's taking place around a given subject, and people can learn how to think and learn how to make their own decisions and find their own convictions about things.
Well said, Brent. Yeah, no, I love it. And yeah, so we've been working on getting more interviews. We've been working on, we're going to do a little mini series before the year is done on at least 3 or 4 episodes on spiritual abuse. We're not going to get like super deep into that. I'm not an expert. I'm not going to pretend to be, but just some things to be thinking about and to be, yeah, just, I'm excited about that series. We got all kinds of fun things coming up. And then the turn of the year, Brent, the whole team, we're going to start going through at the turn of the year. We're going to start going through the Gospel of John verse by verse, verse by verse. People asked, we delivered verse by verse of the Gospel of John with Reed, L, Marty, Josh, Brent, the whole gang is going to go through the Gospel of John, and that's pretty exciting. And we even got some more surprises, Brent. Things we're not going to tell people about, right?
We haven't. Things get a little fuzzy, you know. Ooh, but we have lots things. Of ideas, lots of plans, and yeah, we're gonna get there.
Fuzzy things, absolutely. So that's all that's coming. And the last thing that I would just say is just every now and then we like to come back and say thank you for all of you who financially support our ministry. It has made a difference. Those financial asks really started in an effort to bring Brent on board. And that happened years ago. And he's been full time. And that's been incredible. But that financial support that continues to grow enables us to do more things, to continue to keep our equipment where it ought to be, to continue to add video content on like my YouTube channel, to now add more voices, because Elle and Reed and Josh aren't giving us, we wouldn't ask them to give us those services for free. And so while we can't employ them full time, they are not on the team with BEMA as full time employment. We are able to pay them for that. This is just good. It's the right way to do it. It's exciting. And there are so many of you just giving $10 a month, $20 a month. And then there are some of you that just give unbelievably, like just amounts that blow me away. Your generosity is incredible. For all of you that give a small gift that you probably think is insignificant, it's not, because there's so many of you giving those gifts. And while I'm here, I'll just say we could even do more. And I know how many people are listening, and I know how many people are giving, and I know just how many more people could help us do what we're doing. And that's not a guilt trip. This podcast is not monetized on purpose. We've intentionally had conversations about that. We do not want this to be something that you have to pay to access or feel guilty about using. The study of God's word is going to be free here at BEMA. Always will be. I think I can make that a promise and a guarantee. I sure want to make that a promise. But for people that are able to just even give a little bit, when there are so many of you listening, it makes such an incredible difference. And we could just keep hiring more people to do more things and provide more infrastructure for all of you listening to BEMA and more content. And it's just cool. So I say thank you to all of you who give. We've got a link in every episode, Brent, that people can click on to support us and set up a recurring gift or a one-time gift. We always have that link in the show notes. Or they can just go to the website, BEMA.com, and there's a tab there that says donate. You click on that tab, it'll take you to all the right places. So anything we need to add, Brent, or are we ready to get to the episode?
Nope. I'll just say thank you to all the listeners who answered the call and are supporting my family as I do this work. And it is a huge blessing to bring on new team members. I love them all very dearly, and they are challenging me and bringing new ideas that we wouldn't otherwise have. And so it's very, very great. So that's all I'll say.
Love it. Well, I think it's time to hear from today's special guest. My wife is back to join us. It's going to be weird, Brent, because I start that episode by saying you're not here.
Yeah, not join us. I'm not actually on the rest of this episode.
So that'll be weird. They just heard you and now they won't hear you. But
that's all right. That's all right. They'll get over it.
All right. Well, away we go to our episode. This is the Bema Podcast with Marty Solomon. I am Marty Solomon, and I'm here. If everybody's like, oh no, what's happened again? It's because we're back with another episode of Marty co-hosting with my wife, Becky Solomon.
Hello, everybody. I'm back.
We're back by popular demand. Everybody sent nice messages about that time. So, and here's the thing that I'm wrestling with. Session six. We try to plan. I'm a planner. Becky, am I a planner?
Yes, very much so.
Like dysfunctionally a planner?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like I have to plan so much. Our marriage is definitely, we had to get used to that very early in our marriage. The need for me to have a plan. No doubt about it. And I take that approach to my work. So session six, we try to plan out session six. Brent's got a spreadsheet and we do. We're always like, we're recorded ahead of schedule, all those things. But I am having a heck of a time knowing like where session six is going to go. And I wasn't planning on doing another episode with Becky for a while. That wasn't where I was going to go. And so I just have to be more comfortable with, you know, taking the things that come up, going with wherever the Spirit of God has taken, just inspiring us. You know, I don't mean any of that more poetically than I just mean like I can't plan out where we're headed. And so I'm just getting more and more used. And so we had, you know, things are on my mind, things are on my heart, things that keep coming up. And I'm like, well, why not do an episode about that? I didn't plan it. But here we are with an extra day and an opportunity to do an episode. And so one of the things that we're getting, I'm getting an unusual amount of messages, questions on our live streams, emails, people just looking for like parenting thoughts. One email saying, I want dad advice. I've gotten a few emails in the last month, I think two, maybe three, of people that are going to be new parents. And just asking for like, oh no, here's this child coming, my first child. What kind of awesome Rabbi Marty advice can you give me? Well, probably not a ton of Rabbi Marty advice, but it's just been one of those conversations that we've been constantly having. So I thought, you know, we talked about, Beck, when you come on, we're going to talk about three things, marriage, children, and Judaism. And we can talk about more things. We can break the rules, but those are kind of the three things. So here we are. We're doing an episode. You want to talk about parenting?
Oh yeah. Let's get it. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. We're going to talk about parenting. I'm going to read two passages that I wish I could say that like these passages meant something and I have modeled my parenting after good exegesis of these passages, but that would not necessarily be true. So let's see here. I'm in Ephesians 6. Verse 4. Let's start in 6, verse 1. Ephesians 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. I suppose there's probably a conversation to be had about obeying your, honoring your father and your mother. But that's not what I intended to talk about today, but we could do that. But then the next verse, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. And then you know, the book of Colossians is like a mirror book. It's very, very similar to Ephesians. It has a very similar structure. The content is laid out in the same way. A lot of scholars think that he wrote these two letters, Paul, at the same time, because they're just so very similar as far as like letter design and structure. So let's see here. Very similar. There's a verse here. I'm in Colossians 3, verse 20. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Okay, very similar. And then another similar verse, verse 21. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. So let's do some let's do some context work on these passages just to set the biblical context of what's going on here. So do you want to do that? Do you want to take that away? The context of Ephesians and Colossians?
Sure.
Sweet. I did that to her on purpose, everybody. She said the last time we talked, we just got in here and just talked, and I didn't give her any notes beforehand. And she...
I'm a note person. I want to think about what I want to talk about.
She wanted to know. Can you believe that? She wanted to know what we were going to talk about before we talked about it.
I know. You ask me on the spot, and everything in my brain just disappears. And I'm like, sure. That sounds good.
So I purposely just asked her to do the context work on Pauline letters, just so that she would look at me with that panicked face. It was great. So a couple notes of context here. In the Roman world, Rome, it would not be uncommon for different Roman propaganda, Roman instruction to go out, kind of like cultural Roman from everything from government to other leaders, civil leaders, giving kind of like instructions about what it means to be a Roman, a good Roman household. Now, in those kind of instructions to good Roman households, they always had instructions, as far as I'm aware, we don't even have an exception to this rule. When Rome sent out, when the empire sent out the order, it was always from bottom to top. So it was always instructions about how wives were supposed to treat their husbands, but no instructions about how husbands were supposed to treat their wives. There was instructions for how slaves were supposed to treat their masters, but no instructions about how masters were supposed to treat their slaves. There was instructions for how children were supposed to treat their parents, but never top down, always bottom up. And the idea was that there was an honor system and you could trust those in authority. You were supposed to trust all those that were like leading, but there was never any instruction about what you're supposed to do going down the ladder, only instruction going up the ladder. That's what kept the Roman system strong, was always making sure those on the bottom were serving those above them. That's empire. So these passages that often make us super uncomfortable in our world today, because they seem like, ooh, we don't like the passages about wives spending to their husbands or children or slaves. And yet one of the things that we need to understand about the context of these letters is that what Paul is doing is something very countercultural. Like they would have expected a verse about wives. They would not have expected husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church. For this is on, like that whole section, like what? There's no up and like there's no up and down. There's only up the ladder, and yet this kingdom goes both directions. We treat each other. And that doesn't pop off the page to us when we read it the same way that it would for them. So when you read something about children obey your parents, okay, yeah. But then parents, don't exasperate your children. Like that in and of itself, there's actually a, I think it was Cicero. Do you know? Was it Cicero?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
This is so much fun.
I'm going to start making stuff up.
Oh, so much fun. I think it was Cicero, Roman senator who would write these great Senate speeches, these great political orations. And I believe it was him that told this story. I think a lot of us are familiar with in 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about the church being a body. You can even contribute here. What do you remember about this passage about we are the body of Christ, and the foot cannot say, she's giving me that look, I don't belong because I'm a foot, because I'm not an eye, because I'm not an ear. Every part has its function. This is ringing some bells for you.
Yeah.
And there was actually somebody before Paul wrote that in the letter to the Corinthians. Cicero had done this speech where they were having all of this disunity in the empire, where the citizens, the plebs, they were all kind of like revolting and rebelling against the Senate and the government and the leaders. And so Cicero gave this speech where he essentially talked about the empire as a body, and he said the Senate was like the stomach. But all these other body parts were like, well, we really don't like the stomach. The stomach's kind of a jerk, so we're going to stop feeding the stomach. But of course, if the empire is a body, the problem with that was, what happened if they didn't feed the stomach, Beck?
It would starve.
And then what?
It would crumble.
And every other body part suffers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Cicero tells this, like, you may think that by rebelling, you're really doing something, but it will crush you because it's the stomach that supports all the rest of the body of this Roman Empire. So again, when Paul uses this image of we are the body of Christ, there's this mutuality about the language. It's not just a stomach, because there was no discussion in Cicero's speech about how the hand brings that, like the stomach is dependent on the hand, or the stomach's dependent on the foot. It was just everything else is dependent. It was only one direction. Everything else is dependent on the stomach. So this is the way that Rome talked about. This is your context. I even did some word studies. We'll pull up some word studies here. Let's see here. How about in Ephesians, where it says, fathers, do not exasperate. And I love that word. Do not exasperate your children. Like, I feel that that's, spoiler alert, that's what I want to talk about a lot today. Exasperating our children. The word actually means to rouse to wrath or to provoke. I do love the translation. It means to exasperate. That's there. It's in the lexicon. I do love that translation. Don't exasperate your children. And then later on in that Ephesians passage, it says, rather, bring them up. Now, what do you think of, Beck, when I say, when Ephesians says, don't exasperate your children, but bring them up in the instruction of the Lord. Don't look at the computer screen. What do you think of when you hear that verse? Bring them up in the instruction of the Lord. What do you think that means?
When you say exasperate, I almost think of smothering them.
Right. Beautiful.
And I also think about when you bring them up, like modeling it for them is almost where I think instead of smothering them, when you get smothered, you almost want to push away.
Yep.
And when you bring somebody up in the instruction of the Lord, teaching, modeling it for them, that's where my mind goes anyways.
I love the first translation of exasperate. I've always hated the second translation of bring them up. And it's probably my male, it's probably my own life experience. It's probably the culture and what I think parenting was supposed to do. And it's maybe my maleness. But when I think of like bring them up, I think of like, I don't know, like making your children do the right things. You're bringing them up. You're disciplining them. You're shaping them. You're molding them. Like, you were much more gracious in your hearing of that word, Beck. This idea of modeling. And the word here actually means to nourish, to maturity, to just nourish, to nurture, to bring up. To nourish or to nurture. And that is not the image that I get. When I heard, don't exasperate your children, but bring them up. Like, that was always a weird verse. I'm not supposed to exasperate them, but I'm supposed to bring them up. But now it makes a bit more sense. I'm not supposed to exasperate my children, but I'm supposed to nourish them and bring them up, raise them up, nurture them. Well, that's a different picture. Or in that Colossians passage, do not provoke. What did it say in Colossians? Do not embitter is what my NIV says. Do not embitter your children. The actual word here, erethizo, means to stir up, to stimulate, to provoke. Don't do things that provoke. Whatever our parenting does, it's not supposed to provoke. It's not supposed. I like your word smother. It's not supposed to smother. It's not supposed to like, ugh. Whatever we're doing in our parenting is not that there aren't those moments. I'm not saying there is never those moments in parenting. I mean, come on, let's be real. But the goal of parenting, what good parenting looks like, apparently, what biblical Christian household order here in Pauline literature looks like is not smothering, not provoking, but nourishing, nurturing, watering the plant so that it grows and bears fruit, giving it every, cultivating the soil, giving it all the things that it needs. Not just the pruning, not just the grab a stick and tie the plant to the stick so that it grows straight, but there's a nurturing, a nourishment. There's a place for all those things. So don't embitter, don't provoke your children. What's the next one here? Athameo. Let's see here. Or they will become disheartened. What did my NIV say? They will become discouraged. Yeah, that's a good translation. They'll be disheartened, dispirit. Don't provoke your kids or they'll be dispirited. I think this is part of what I do, especially with our son. I do this.
And you know what I was thinking when you were saying all this is that it's easier to lash out and provoke. It's harder to nourish and encourage and have patience to nourish your children and bring them up. When you're angry, it's easy to do these things. So it's training yourself, having discipline yourself as a parent to take a moment, be patient, and realize you need to teach them in that moment rather than lash out and provoke and smother them.
Yeah, I like what you said about
deflate them.
I like what you said about disciplining yourself because parenting as partnership would maybe be a phrase I would marinate on. Like if I learn anything from the context that I just shared, it's that the Roman household system is top down hierarchy. The Christian household system is one of much more equity, much more mutuality, much more like it. It's much more of a flat economy. And so parenting has this partnership, not that you're peers. You're still the dad, that's still the child, you're still the mom, that's still the daughter, whatever. But there's more of a flat, there's a relationship that you're engaged in. There's a mutual engagement of you're learning and I'm learning. You're discipline you're experiencing discipline, I'm disciplining myself. Like we're kind of in this together. There's a more mutual experience there, which I really like. And then what else did you say? What else did you say right there? You said something else that was really good. It's easy to
provoke and just lash out when you're angry.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I definitely do this differently with our, and we made this point in our last time we got together in our last episode, like all our kids are different. Mm-hmm. So I definitely feel like my son's the crazy rambunctious. I mean, he's a boy, but he just has this like nature about him that's always pushing my buttons. And I'm just constantly on him, constantly. And I feel like if I have one regret, it's how often I, what's this word? Athumeo, how often I break his spirit. Like he's just trying to have fun and he's driving me crazy. He's just trying to engage and I'm annoyed and I'm constantly breaking his spirit. So that's one of my like biggest, I want to get better at that. So anyway, what I wanted to do for our conversation today is I have this response that I have been like copy pasting to folks that write me. It started with one person. I kind of wrote a more personal letter response to them, and now I'm like kind of adjusting it. So I wanted to go through this kind of like paragraph by paragraph so that we could. So here it is. For anybody out there who's a new parent, who's an old parent, who has children of whatever. So let's see here. I say to this person, I said, I want to send out a congratulatory note and say, you know, happy Mother's Day, happy Father's Day, happy whatever day to you. We're long past that by the time this episode posts. But we celebrate life when we think about parenting. And I'm not sure if the things that we'll share, I don't know if I'll call these things wisdom by any stretch. But maybe there'll be something that God will be able to do through some of these words. My great words of encouragement will come straight out of the idea of trusting the story. Surprise, surprise. Trusting the story. The fact of the matter is that you already have everything you need to be a great parent. You already have everything you need to be a great parent. Don't ever forget this. Don't ever buy into the lie that you aren't momming well enough, you aren't dadding well enough, you're not parenting well enough. That is where we'll make our greatest mistakes. This goes all the way back to the book of Genesis. Like sin arises because of fear and insecurity. When you're afraid that you're not parenting well enough, that is where you'll make some of your greatest mistakes. You already have everything. It's not an issue of knowing more, of getting one more podcast, of getting one more tidbit of insight. You have everything you need already inside of you, and you need to trust that as you go to parent, because when you work out of that insecurity, that's where you're in a dangerous place. What do you got to say about that?
Yeah, I was just thinking fears from your past. Like, I don't want to be like my mom or like my dad or parent like they did and make those mistakes.
Right.
Like parenting out of fear.
To parent out of reaction.
Yeah.
Of something you don't want to be rather than parenting into something you do want to be. I like that. We have a, you should tell them about your little penny thing that we do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Where did we find that? Did I find that or you found
that? I found that and gave it to you as a Mother's Day gift, I think.
Yeah, and it was like a little blog post.
Uh-huh.
And somebody was sharing about, I think it was a mom who was sharing about how she wanted to be mindful of her investment, is what she called it, investments into her children. So she had a jar that started out empty that was called investments. And then
Each child has a jar.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Ezekiel and Abby. Both of them have a jar that started out as empty and then a big jar.
Yeah, the big jar said investments and it was empty, but each child had pennies in it and they each had.
You understand this better than I do. I was shaking my head at her. Like, you've got it backwards, but she was right.
I know.
I should have known that.
So they each have a penny for each week, well, of the year, but for 18 years. So there's 50.
At the beginning, whenever you had a kid, you would put that many pennies, whatever it is, 18 times 52.
Right.
A penny for every week of their life until they're 18 years old.
Until they're 18. And so I put it in every Sunday. I take one penny out of each jar because I have two kids. And I put it into the investment jar. And it's just a reminder of investing in my, did I invest in my children well this week? And it's just like a visual reminder. And my kids are almost 13 and 11 now. So their jars are half empty now. And I'm looking at it like, oh my gosh, their jars are half empty. I only have, you know, more than half empty.
Yeah.
Nine is halfway. So it's a very good reminder for me that am I investing in my children well every single week?
And there's like, there's a blog post that we actually printed out and it sits by the, so that you can be reminded, you can read it when you do it. But part of that blog post that I wish I had a link to it and I'd throw it in the show notes, but I don't believe I do. If I can find it, I'll give it to Brent and he'll put it in the show notes. But part of this blog post says, there will have been moments in that week. It's one penny for every week. Well, during that week, you've had some moments that you probably wish you could take back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe whole days that were just absolute disasters.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably had more moments where you made, like you were self-sacrificial. You made sacrifices. You, like it went good. And even the stuff that went like just normal, like it went average, that's a win. Like we all know, like average, that's a parenting win.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing it good enough is definitely good enough. And then you have your wins and you have your losses. And when you tally it all up, the losses are the things you want to remember, but they're far out, the wins far outweigh the losses.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you put that penny in, it's like, oh, yes, I did make an, is in the face of whatever it is that I failed at, we did, you know, do something right. So I like that. Like we have what we need. And I think we're far, like I just talked about a couple minutes ago, like all the things that I have all regret and I want to get better at those things, but I can't let those things define my parenting. I can't let those things like, yes, I want to get better at those things, but no, I'm not a horrible dad. And I appreciate that you remind me of that often because I will start to listen to those voices as any of us do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's see. What's the next paragraph I wrote here? Be present, be love, and always do your best to see the full humanity of those in your family. And this has everything to do, not just with our children. It also has to do, our children are watching the ways that we treat each other. I can really see that now as our children are now 11, 12 years old. I can really watch them watching the way we talk and interact and those kind of things. I hope they've caught our sarcasm. My wife and I are super sarcastic.
Super sarcastic.
We trash talk each other all the time.
Yeah. And now there are some jokes that I can't even tell out loud anymore because
that has always been our relational dynamic. In fact, your brothers, when we first started hanging out, thought yes. I was like the biggest jerk.
Yeah.
Because they didn't pick up that we were like, we're just messing with each other all the time.
They kept asking, you guys are so snarky. I'm like, yeah, we are.
So anyway, but your kids are watching the way you treat each other. That's why I said I hope our kids understand that and see that for everything that it is in all the good ways. But they're watching how you interact. So if you're a mom, if you're a dad, your interaction with your family is about seeing the full humanity of your wife, of your husband, of your children. And the goal of those relationships is to help others see who they truly are. Cause we don't ever get to see, like, we can't see on our own who we truly are. We're always going to have a screwed up, clouded, insecure, dumb image of who we are. It's never going to be, but with the help of other people, that's what makes family. That's what makes marriage. That's what makes parenting such a beautiful thing, is these are people that are actually holding the mirror up to us, going, no, this is who you actually are. So your job as a parent and as a spouse, but as a parent, your job is to help others see who they truly are, the identity that is buried inside of them that they sometimes doubt exists at all. This is what we get to do, like, every day as a parent, is look at our children and go, I know who you really are. And I want to call out of, I want to, what was the word? Nourish, nurture, build up. Fathers, don't exasperate your children, but build them up. This is at least in part in our modern language, what I believe Paul could be talking about when he uses this word to nourish and to nurture and to build up. Like, call out of them what and who they are and say, that is good. That is true. That is who you are. That's what parenting should be more of that than it is, don't do this, don't do that. Make sure you don't do this. Make sure you don't screw that up. Make sure you don't make this mistake. But I feel like when we parent out of fear, that's where we go to.
Yeah. And I would just add, like, say it multiple times. Don't call it out of them one time. A person needs to be reminded of who they are, even daily. I like it when you remind me things daily. You're beautiful daily, because I'll forget. And then I'll be like insecure again and act out of that insecurity. But if you remind me, it's not just remember when I told you that? Oh, right. Yeah, last year. No, we need to remind each other daily or very often of those things.
Right. All right, here's my next little paragraph of notes. I think if I were to boil down my thoughts about my goals as being a dad into a few points, it would be this. Make sure that your children don't hate themselves. Love them most when they love themselves the least, which is usually like what? When they make mistakes, when they're struggling with, and our kids are going right through that time right now, like middle school, puberty, and boy, love your kids the most. Make sure your children don't hate themselves. Because that, if you leave them up to themselves, they will hate themselves. Mm-hmm. We all will. But especially in this world that we live in today, surrounded by screens and social media and all these things that tell you this is what beautiful is, this is what great is, this is what significance is. Make sure your children don't hate themselves. Like, you have to be one of the voices that's fighting the cultural narrative that isn't necessarily telling them to hate themselves, but will lead them to hate themselves if not nourished, nurtured, and built up in the right way. Make sure your children don't hate Jesus. And that seems like a no-brainer. That's probably the one that I'm most passionate about. I feel like Christian families do not realize, because they're so passionate about wanting to make sure their children are Christians, make sure their children are believers, and when it's all said and done, the children end up hating Jesus. That's why I love the term exasperate, because that's what I think of. Don't exasperate your kids with endless expectations and religious morality. Make sure that when they hear the name Jesus, they think of love, acceptance, rest, belonging. Like, I want my kids, when they think of Jesus, to be like, oh, Jesus. Like, yes, not like, oh, Jesus, oh, goodness, or, oh, Jesus, Dad, shut up. No, 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 I want them, like, Jesus, I want to be this sacred thing that when they hear Jesus, they think of love, rest, acceptance, belonging. And make sure that your children see that you love your spouse honestly, vulnerably, full of mistakes that fall into a net of humility, a mattress of humility, a dedication to lift up your spouse to be the most special thing alongside Jesus himself, presented pure and spotless, to quote Ephesians, without blemish in the love of Christ. Make sure your kids don't hate themselves. Make sure your kids don't hate Jesus. Anything you'd add to that?
Don't smother them with Jesus. Don't smother them with Jesus. There was something else that was good too. Loving your spouse. Yeah, be good at saying sorry and asking for forgiveness. That's so good for your kids to see that you can own your mistakes.
Yeah.
And say you're sorry and ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, your kids pick up on what normal is because of what they see. And like if they grow up in that context, that's what normal is. So if saying I'm sorry, if critical thinking, if the ability to say I was wrong without hating yourself, if the ability to overcome guilt and shame, if that's normal, not that it's done perfectly, but if it's normal, they will assume that's what normal is. They'll live into that normal. If that's never done in your house, if that's never done in your parenting, well, then they're not going to know how to do it. They're not going to assume it at all. So therefore, they're not going to do it. They're going to have to learn how to do that later on in life, like so many of us have had to do. So absolutely. Make sure your kids see you go to therapy. Because I know I will probably never see my parents' generation go to therapy. Like, not all of them, but by and large, that's just not something that generation did. There was a stigma about that. And I'm hoping that my kids see us do those things because emotional health is important. And dad needs help from other people. And those are the things I want my kids to see as, like, normal.
Yes.
So if you follow these guiding principles, in my opinion and experience, everything else has unbelievable clarity. Like those are like the lenses you can use. That's the parenting yoke for me. That if you put on those lenses, everything else has unbelievable. Well, what do I do about this? Well, make sure your kids don't hate themselves. Make sure your kids don't hate Jesus. And everything is kind of like, oh, and there's a lot of clarity for me comes from that. When I have gotten things wrong, it's been when I'm wearing a different set of lenses. Like when I let my religion, my church, my fears about how to parent my children, when I let my insecurity, my fears parent, there is no clarity. It's something else. When I let my religion or even my church parent my children, things are out of whack. It doesn't. When I let their full humanity, like their identity as who God created them to be, and the person of Jesus guide that, I just feel like a lot of clarity has come to my parenting. All right, so we'll work towards a close here. I feel like I just talked about 40 minutes and really never said really articulately what I'm really passionate about in this whole conversation. Fathers, don't exasperate your kids, but build them up. I just feel like the mistake I see in most committed, and I come from a fundamentalist conservative evangelical subculture. So that's my reference point. I know not everybody shares that. So please adjust your expectations. But what I have run into as a pastor and as a child and as a parent over and over again in our little corner of the world, our evangelical corner of the world, is parents exasperating their kids in the name of Christ. Like they have all the right stuff. It's all good. And they are just, I love your word, smothering. They are just smothering them with all the good stuff. And not in a good way. Like the kids aren't like smiling, like being smothered in like a bouncy ball house or something. Like, oh, like that kind of fun smothering. Oh, I'm being buried in something fun. No, like they're like, they can't breathe. They're being smothered with goodness, but they're still being smothered. And that doesn't mean, again, that the only other option is just free for all, do whatever you want. It means instead of parenting people with this overbearing, oppressive presence of Christ, it's a seeing your children for their people. They're young people, they're little people, but they're people, like they're human beings. And calling out who they are, inviting them into something good. Have the goodness, but don't smother them with it. Like, have the table set with all the goodness, and then teach them how to come to the table and sit at the table and use the table and want the table. Like, want the table. Like, that's my biggest, as my kids, and we have this thing in our world. We have in the Jewish world, we've got a bar and a bat mitzvah. And we were just talking about it the other day, literally just a couple days ago. When my kids turn 13, it's now, the bar and bat mitzvah means daughter and son of the commandment. That's when you become a son or a daughter of the commandment. You now take Torah on yourself. And if my kids choose to not, at 13 years old, if my kids choose to not carry Torah, that's their choice. And it may even bother me. I'm sure it would on a very deep level. But that's their choice. It's their journey. And the worst thing that I could do is try to smother them with the Torah walk. Try to smother them with the laws and the rules and the whatever. I can model it. Like what we said the other day, there won't be any bacon double cheeseburgers in our house. But if every time they go out with their friends, they want to order a bacon double cheeseburger, okay. Yeah, that's cool. You know, whatever that looks like, but don't exasperate. Invite them to make the table something that when they finally get the choice, they'll choose it. Because it was something that they got to choose and something they wanted to choose based on what they experienced the whole time. That table is full of good things. Don't smother them with all the good things to where all they want to do is get out from underneath it. Anyway, that's enough. I feel like I didn't talk about that well at all. Nevertheless, we're going to close. We were talking about the pennies earlier, right? So we've got this post, because I don't know if I can find it on the internet. We're going to try to, but if we don't, I'm going to read it to you. And I don't have it attributed on this printout. Shoot. I may have even adjusted it a little bit for your Mother's Day. I don't know. But here we go. We're going to read it to you. In these jars are pennies for every week you will raise your children. Every week, when you get home from church, remove one penny from each jar, and it will be a reminder of the time you have left to raise your son or daughter before they go out on their own. They look so many, yet they are so very few. At the beginning, it will be easy to take out 1, 2, 3, 4. And to say to yourself, those are well spent, snuggling every moment. But when your child turns the age of the terrible twos, when it lasts longer than two, you will have to ask yourself the inedible question, how were they spent? A penny can be invested. It has the potential of growing in value. It also has the potential of getting lost in a couch cushion. If we are to divide a penny into 7 parts, 1 day for each week, what worth are we breathing into each of those days? Further, a day can be divided up into moments. Maybe you'll be afraid to begin removing pennies because you'll know that with each penny you remove, that little glass jar will only grow lighter. Some days you'll feel like you spent your whole penny, an allowance of a week, in a single 24-hour period. In a weak moment, you can feel like you blew through 5 cents. One slip of the tongue, one impatient reaction, one missed opportunity to speak truth, one fatigued mama feeling the whole weight of failure. It could leave you wondering if you just screwed up a whole week of parenting, or if your actions or your reactions will stick with them for a lifetime. How you spend these pennies will shape the rest of their lives. They'll carry the effects of your spending habits with them for the rest of their days beyond your nest. One thing is certain, no matter how you spend each penny, you purchase with it a pile of lessons in motherhood. After a long day, when they are sound asleep in their bed, and your mind is finally able to rest, apart from their little voices asking, demanding, quarreling, loving, thanking, apologizing, and being little voices, don't put those voices out of your head. Replay them. The conversations of the day, the requests, the new words, sentences, questions, understandings, every I love you, thank you, Mama, I'm sorry, Mama. And then replay your own voice from the day, its tones, the harshness, the apologies, the love, the laughter, and your eyes, although very weary and longing to shut. Recount photos of moments from your day, and then back through your week, and then back to last week, all the way back to the day you took that trip home from the hospital, a jar full, 936 pennies rich, and the photos, the voices, the words, the memories of each week, each day, each moment sent from your iPhone, despite the days that you lost a penny in the couch or spent one frivolously, or got to the end of the day and wondered if you would ever get things right, or if you would ever get to the end of 18 years and be full of regret, grace begins to wash over you. Those fears will wash away in light of it all, in light of 76 weeks with your dear, sweet, loud toddler, and 172 weeks with your firstborn, the children who made you a mom. When you back up and see all those weeks as a whole, you'll see a grand display of God's grace. His grace that covers a multitude of wrongs, a grace so much larger than all your tongue slips and raised voice moments. And now, a second jar, a jar ready for pennies. Set the two jars side by side and begin to count. As you withdraw those pennies from that jar, that they are not being lost, they're not being misplaced or tossed out, never to be seen again. They are being invested. They are creating something new, something of great beauty, bravery, and kingdom importance. They are building your children into who God has created them to be. And if we can find it, we will attribute that post to the appropriate person. It is certainly not our own. Pretty good, though.
Very good.
Very good. All right, everybody. I don't know if that was a coherent conversation today at all, but it's been another great episode. This is the Bema Podcast, and we thank you for joining us today. Boy, I didn't do that right at all. I can't do Brent's job. I tried to. What does Brent say at the end of the podcast? Thanks for joining us on the Bema Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Marty Solomon. You can find Brent on Twitter at EIBCB. You can find Becky on Twitter, but she never uses it.
Did you just say EIB?
ECBCI, EIBCB. Yeah, EIBCB. Yep, I said it right.
What does the E stand for?
There's something behind it. I can't remember what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, great question for Brent.
Brent.
The great secret, EIBCB. I know Brent CB, Brent Charles Billings. EI is something. I cannot remember what it is. There we go. Brent, you can feel free to cut that right out or leave it right in there. Or you can insert your answer to the end of that episode. But thanks for joining us on the Bema Podcast. We'll talk to you again soon. I'll read it because you won't be able to read it without crying. That's for sure. Brent can just chop all this out.
We should have put something funny in there like, oh, we...